reeking, rotting garbage overflowing from bins. That is what I found when, in November 2004, I pushed open the main door of a massive but anonymous gray stone apartment building in Vienna's 3rd Bezirk district and made my way through a hallway to an internal courtyard. The rectangular 4-story building's facade bears a commemorative plaque put up by the Vienna Schubert Society on May 7, 1924, the 100th anniversary of the premiere of Beethoven's 9th Symphony, as well as another more recent plaque bedecked with banners dirtied by automobile exhaust, which proclaims that the symphony's Ode to Joy theme has been the European anthem since 1972, when the Council of Ministers in Strasbourg officially adopted it as such. There is no museum in the building at Ungargasse 5 on the northwest corner of a busy intersection. In fact, by going through the entrance door, I was trespassing on private property. In the composer's day, the address was Landstrasse 323, and the building was called the House zur schönen Sklaven, by the beautiful slave girl. Beethoven lived in it throughout the final months of the symphony's creation and until shortly after its first performance. His apartment was situated on the top floor, the cheapest one in pre-elevator days, but he usually received friends and acquaintances at a nearby, no longer extant coffee house, zur goldenen Birne, by the Golden Pear, where he spent many an afternoon. As one contemporary writer put it, if you have something important to tell a Viennese man, you can go 10 times to his apartment without finding him in. But if you know which coffee house he frequents, you'll meet him there for sure. Occasionally, however, people would visit Beethoven at home. Once, during the composition of the Ninth, he invited the poet Franz Grillparzer to the Landstrasse apartment to discuss an opera project. Grillparzer found Beethoven, who was ill at the time, lying on a disordered bed in dirty night attire, a book in his hand. At the head of the bed, there was a small door which, as I discovered later, communicated with the larder and which Beethoven was, in a way, guarding. For when subsequently a maid emerged from it with butter and eggs, he could not restrain himself, though in the middle of a spirited conversation, from casting an appraising glance at the quantity of the food that was being carried away. And this gave me a painful picture of his disordered household. The opera project never came to fruition, and we don't know what happened to the butter and eggs. The composer Carl Maria von Weber visited Beethoven during the same period, and his son later recounted the father's impressions of the dreary, almost sordid room inhabited by the great Ludwig. It was in the greatest disorder. Music, money, clothes lay on the floor, linen in a heap on the unclean bed. The open grand piano was covered in thick dust, and broken coffee cups lay on the table. Beethoven tossed all the music off the sofa and then proceeded to dress for the street, not in the least embarrassed by the presence of his guests. Another man present on that occasion described Beethoven's appearance. His hair dense, gray, standing up, quite white in places, forehead and skull extraordinarily wide and rounded, the nose square like a lion's, the mouth nobly formed and soft, the chin broad and with those marvelous dimples which all his portraits show, formed by 2 jawbones which seemed capable of cracking the hardest nuts. A dark ruddiness colored his broad, pockmarked face. Beneath the bushy and sullenly contracted eyebrows, small, shining eyes were fixed benevolently upon the visitors. Of another visit to Beethoven, presumably a few weeks later, Weber wrote to his wife that the day would always remain a most memorable one for me, and that it was curiously exalting to be overwhelmed with such affectionate attentions by this great man.